Hello and welcome to the Primary Care Respiratory Society podcast series. I'm Catherine Hickman, Executive Chair of PCRS. Each podcast you will hear insightful topics, interviews, experiences and conversations around a plethora of respiratory themes, as well as actionable tips and strategies for you to use in your day-to-day practices. Thank you for joining us and we hope you enjoy this podcast.
Hi, I'm Steve Holmes, general practitioner down in Somerset and currently working with the conference organising committee and the policy group with the Primary Care Respiratory Society. And I'm delighted today to be joined by Ren.
Hello, my name is Ren and I am an advanced nurse practitioner, still clinical and academic tutor in Southeast London, but living in Scotland, so a little bit of a commute for me. And I am the vice chair for exec for PCRS and also the education committee chair.
So lots of posh titles from both of us. That's terrible, isn't it? But I think probably the most important thing is hopefully we've got some useful insights to talk about the asthma review, the dreaded asthma review, the online asthma review, the asthma review that never happens, or the real interpersonal asthma review that the patient dreams of but never quite gets.
That isn't a tick box exercise.
The tick box review. We've forgotten that one as well. Okay, so we've immediately identified some of the problems. Where should we start?
Can I start as a patient?
Please do.
Okay, so my last asthma review was about 2 years ago. I've had nothing since. And my asthma review came via a text that advised me that I was due and that I needed to go online and I needed to follow this link. And the link would allow me to sort of fill in, if you like, how my asthma is and how I'm doing and that kind of thing. So I went ahead and I did that and that was fine. And then I, about a week or maybe 2 weeks later, I got a kind of printout template that had obviously been kind of taken from an online website. And I got this printout that just basically said everything that I had inputted, if you like, onto this form online. So there was no kind of direction about whether I understood what asthma was. It didn't talk about triggers. It didn't mention if I smoked or not. It was a very basic, take your brown in the morning and in the afternoon, take your blue if you need it. And if you're taking lots and lots of blue, let us know. And that was it.
So what was your feeling as a patient on the other side of the fence?
So I didn't recognise myself in that template. Now, that sounds a bit dramatic, but let me explain. So it felt like that could have just been printed off and given to the asthmatic population of my GP surgery. And I'm loath to say it, but I am going to say it. It's, you know, the personalisation, if you like, or the individualisation that we talk about just wasn't there. It was literally a piece of paper that had my name on top, but didn't have anything that I recognised in terms of me or my condition. And I found that really interesting because I put it in the drawer and you know, I've never looked at it since. And that was 2 years ago and I've heard nothing since either.
And I think I rather cheekily thought about the acronym PAAP as Paternalistic Asthma Action Plan. Nothing to do with the person, but someone's done it to you.
Yeah, that's exactly how it felt. Yeah, that's a really good way of explaining it.
And I guess probably one of the things that I thought through from that was, okay, so online questionnaires allow us as healthcare professionals to collect data to potentially identify those who smoke and want help. Mm-hmm. To find out how many people are checking their blood pressure or doing other things. But who is it really helping?
Well, I mean, I think we have to recognise the burden that, you know, healthcare professionals are under. We have to recognise how stretched we are. We have to recognise the legacy of COVID in terms of us realising how much can be done online and via video. And actually for patients, you know, for me as a pretty well-controlled asthmatic, I think, possibly, you know, I don't want to have to go and sit with a practice nurse or with someone who goes through a template and then just says, okay, you seem to be doing quite well, well done. And I know I'm you know, I'm obviously being a little dramatic here, but so I can completely understand, you know, the value of being able to go online and do a review. My concern is who is then looking at that review? So as you say, is this someone who's just collating the data and adding it into a template for Quaff? Or is somebody looking at these kind of online consultations within the surgery and saying, that doesn't seem too good. I should probably contact that individual because the answers they've given make me a little bit nervous about their overall control.
Yeah, and it's a difficult balance. I think we're probably in that exploration phase at the moment. I know the government like lots of data. Mm-hmm. And everyone says, I've got more data than you. And we've got to do this for some parts of Quaff, but they're checking it all over the place throughout the system. Mm. And we're feeding a beast with more and more data. But we've got to do something with that data.
Mm.
I guess probably there are ways where if you put information in, you could have some suggestions for your personalised asthma action plan sent back to you. And some of that might be with AI, dare I say it.
Mm.
Almost as good as many clinicians would manage in a one-to-one.
Yeah.
I take your point. I was just thinking, would I really want to go and see a healthcare professional every 6 months or a year with a health condition if I felt it was really well controlled and the parameters I had when I looked online and when I sent them in appeared to be well controlled as well? I'd probably say, no, come on, I've been 10 times before. Really, what am I going to gain this time?
Yeah, and I think the other thing with asthma, you know, that just as you were speaking there, Steve, I was thinking maybe the danger here is that, you know, a patient feels they're well controlled when they're actually not, and that sort of stuff. But I think that asthma, although lumped in with kind of long term conditions, I think it's a very different condition from your COPD, from your heart failure, from your all those other ones, because it's not on a natural trajectory to deteriorate. Do you see what I mean? So it's that kind of thing that once you get to, you know, I'm in my 40s now, dare I say it.
No, you're not.
Behave. So I kind of feel that I kind of have a good understanding of how my asthma moves throughout the year. And so one of the things that really resonates with me in terms of a good review is looking at those patterns and those trends and not just focusing in on the medication. And I think that we do that. And I'm not belittling the importance of medication. Of course, I'm not. But I think that, you know, with asthma, having somebody discuss with you about your triggers, for example, as part of a review, I would find a little bit more helpful. Do you see what I mean? So I don't know if I'm being clear here. So, for example, you know, if you as an asthmatic absolutely know that your asthma is going to get worse around springtime, and I appreciate with climate change and all that kind of stuff, we don't even know when spring is half the time now. Certainly the daffodils in my garden don't. But, you know, if you know that around sort of March time, you generally get that hay fever, things generally get worse. For me, that would be a really helpful thing to have on my asthma plan, because it would remind me, you know, when you get to February, it's probably a good idea to start your hay fever meds, as opposed to getting to March, having a full blown sort of allergic response and thinking, oh, I should have done that. And I think that's the kind of thing that the asthma reviews tend to sort of miss a little bit, that kind of trigger awareness and that kind of stuff.
And that may be because we're using a formulaic plan. And
yes.
The plan is primarily designed to say, what do I do if things get bad? Mm. Not how to prevent it. So perhaps what we need to do is up our game a little bit and ensure that some of those plans say, and one of the things that struck me is, asthma is not a persistent progressive condition.
Yeah, yeah.
It varies, and it varies over years, like a lot of people with eczema. And I think we're used to seeing people with eczema having it for a couple of months and then no problem for 2 years, and then they come back. In asthma, we may well be really over-treating people if we've got them on the high-level treatment they need at certain points throughout the 2 years when they only need it for a couple of months. So I think we've got to really start thinking about individualizing that care to the person and making sure that we give them effective medication advice and support, but also preventative as well, and understand that natural history better rather than assuming like blood pressure. Well, your blood pressure must be up all the time. COPD, it's persistent airway flow obstruction. Asthma isn't. We've got to up our game a bit there.
Mm. So I've been, I was going to say I've been banging on about this because I feel like I've become a very repetitive character in life, because I keep saying this kind of strap line, which is we are very reactive in terms of how we treat any condition. And I feel, and very much with asthma as well, that we need to be proactive and not reactive. You know, so what we tend to do is we tend to be very good when people are symptomatic. So people come to us, they say, I'm not feeling very well. And we go, oh, quick, I must react. But actually, if we were more proactive, we could avoid potentially those episodes where someone's very unwell. You know, and if somebody knows that if they get an upper respiratory tract infection, or if they go and stay at a friend's house who's got seven cats and they're allergic to cats, then it would be a very good idea to start, restart, or whatever their preventative therapy before they go, as opposed to getting there and going, oh my God, they're really bad. My asthma is really bad because of these cats. And so that kind of getting people into the mindset of being proactive to avoid having to be reactive. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. In life, if we know, if we think it's going to rain, we take an umbrella with us or some protection. We don't just say, well, we'll see what happens, then run along and try and get some emergency umbrellas. Perhaps some do, because I can see some in shops. But by and large, we try to predict what we're going to be doing during the day. If we're going on a long journey, we don't fill up with half a gallon of petrol and then suddenly think, oh, crumbs, I forgot to do that. We think a little bit ahead. So life isn't just about responsiveness. And I think we've got to treat our patients as adults as well.
Ooh, tricky.
Right. Let's move on a little bit. There's plenty of evidence out there. Great stuff on the PCRS website on asthma reviews. Great stuff produced by the BTS and others in that same sort of area. I guess one of the things that we should think about is, we've talked about a bit about a personalised asthma action plan, personalised, not paternalistic. It is done with the person, not sent to them as a done deal. What other things do you think we ought to be doing in an asthma review if we're seeing them face to face?
I'm going to say it because someone has to say it, but we cannot ignore smoking. Sorry. And I know that people will listen and go, we don't get financial incentive to do that. We don't provide cessation anymore in terms of appointments. I don't really know what I'm doing. There's so many things on the market now. Should I be telling my patient to try vaping instead of smoking? All of those kind of things. So I know it's become problematic, and I know that people find it difficult. But if you are an asthmatic and you are smoking, then, you know, all of the other stuff that we're talking about in terms of your inhaled corticosteroid, in terms of inflammatory responses, all of that kind of stuff is going to be affected. And so I don't think it's all right just to ask if somebody's smoking, record it for the data collection, as you say, and then just move on.
Yeah. And we've known for 15 to 20 years that the impact of smoking on somebody with asthma is it inhibits the effect of the inhaled corticosteroid. So the most effective treatment we've got, it isn't as good. And in a way that I'm still surprised that quite a lot of clinicians don't, that the more expert clearly are aware of it, but it's one of those things that we need to make sure we get right. I think from my side now, smoking cessation is just one of those quick, fundamental, very brief advice type techniques to talk about. And keep pushing it, because I know a lot of my patients want to stop. I know the most effective way to help them. I don't need to mess around with all the other discussions most of the time.
No, not at all.
Okay, so you've done smoking.
Yep.
That's good. What about inhalers and medication and the dreaded compliance, concordance, adherence debates?
So I think this is a difficult one around asthma. And the reason I say that is because, exactly as we said earlier, you will have periods of time as an asthmatic where you are asymptomatic. And what we know about patients with any condition really is if they cannot feel that something's wrong, they tend to not feel the need to treat it. And I'm guilty of that. So, you know, I've got very good example of my dad is in his 70s, very, very healthy, very sensible, intelligent guy. And our family history, we've got high cholesterol, and he just stopped taking his statin. And when I asked him why he stopped, he said, well, he said, I wasn't really sure that it was doing anything, to be honest. And so I thought I'd stop it. And then when I got my cholesterol checked the next time, I'd see if it had made a difference. And I was like, my God. And I think that's a sensible guy who hasn't got a chaotic life, who isn't struggling with mental health, who isn't on reams and reams of medication and all that kind of stuff. So I think when it comes to the pharmacotherapy with asthma, when someone is asymptomatic or when someone has normalized their symptoms, they stop taking their inhalers. And I think we need to recognize that in our reviews. So I think we need to say, look, you know, there might be periods of time where you don't have any symptoms and it's okay to not take your inhaler in that time as long as this, 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 and this. Because it then allows the patient to kind of say to you, well, actually, no, I haven't been taking my brown or purple or whatever colour we have now inhaler because I haven't felt that I've needed it.
And I guess we're in a situation academically where we know the value of regular maintenance treatment with, as required, short-acting beta agonist.
Mm.
We are increasingly using a maintenance and reliever therapy type approach. And we also have anti-inflammatory reliever work that's coming through with Gina at the moment and others, much more supportive of as required treatments. Mm. What we don't have is the evidence to know what to do in between times. So
yes.
if we to create studies that do that will be incredibly difficult. But if we don't have the studies, they're not going to get into guidelines. So this is going to be the part, and I can't remember, some famous clever guy said, expertise starts where guidelines finish.
Mm.
And I think it's that we've got to be able to adapt what we know of the guidance, the evidence base, and help our patients to be pragmatic and sensible about when they use their treatments.
Yes. I think the other thing as well is that from the age of two, when we can start to sort of understand things, you know, we're taught as human beings to chase the pat on the head. We don't want to be told off. We are designed to need someone to say you're doing very well. And if a patient comes in and feels in any way whatsoever that they're being judged, and I'm not saying that that's what we do, but that's the feeling they might get, then they'll tend to lie to get the pat on the head and not the telling off. And it's, you know, so if the amount of times, you know, that I've kind of said to a patient, or, you know, what inhalers do you take? And they say immediately, and it's like a rehearsed speech. I take the brown one in the morning, 2 puffs, and I take the brown one in the evening, 2 puffs. And you're kind of looking at their prescriptions thinking, no, you don't. Or if you do, I don't know how you're managing that.
Yeah.
So I think there's a real thing in a review about how we word those questions to ensure that we're giving a patient space to, I don't want to say be honest, because that suggests that they're lying in a very negative way. And it's not that. It's that they want to give you the right information so they get a well done, not a told off. And so what I tend to say now is I can see from your record that we have prescribed you, you know, whatever it might be. And sometimes you need to use the colours because they don't know the names of the inhalers. And that's a bit tricky, but that's another thing. And I kind of say, how often do you need the brown one, for example, or how often do you use the brown one? And it just gives them a little bit of space to kind of say, to be honest, I don't use it every day. And I say, is that because you feel that you don't need it? Or is it, what's your kind of reasoning? And you do get those patients. So, well, I just don't feel it working. You know, if I feel a bit tight-chested or a bit wheezy and I take the brown one, it doesn't make a difference. So you've already then uncovered the fact that they don't really understand the nature of asthma and what their medicines are doing. And you're going to be far better spending that time that you have with that person in an asthma review, kind of re-educating and kind of exploring their kind of beliefs, as it were, in terms of their meds, than you are getting them to do hundreds of peak flows or whatever else you might be using that time for.
And I think I get that sort of message of the dead end alley, where if you say to a patient, and often we nod when we say it, are you taking your inhaler twice a day?
Mm.
They nod back and say yes, because I want to please you.
Yes, exactly.
At which point, when I say, but you've got lots of symptoms, can I give you some medication that's even more dangerous than you're on already? We have to increase the strength. they really are in a catch-22 situation, and we've probably put them there. Yeah, no, I, like you, use similar phrases like, in the real world, it's really difficult to remember to brush your teeth twice a day. It's really difficult to remember to use any form of treatment regularly every time. And to help us to work forward with you, what I want to know roughly is what you're actually doing with those inhalers at the moment. Which ones seem to work for you, which don't? How often are you really using it?
And I think the other thing that you can look at, if you can see on their records that they are underusing their inhaled corticosteroid, and you can see just by how many prescriptions they've had in the preceding, since their last review, for example. And another sort of strategy that I suppose that I use is to say to patients, it looks like we aren't giving you enough of your inhaled corticosteroid for you to be able to take it the amount of times that we've discussed would be a good amount for you to take. And that sounds kind of simple, really, but what I'm doing is I'm taking the blame.
Yep.
And that again allows patients to not feel like they've got it wrong or they've done something wrong. Because what I'm saying is I haven't given you enough for you to be able to do this. And then what I find is quite often they sort of say, oh, well, I've got enough because I don't take it all the time. Or I say, you know, do you ever kind of miss a dose or anything? And then I immediately say, it's absolutely fine if you do, but it's really important for me to know because it might be that we've got you on the wrong medication because you don't need that much or whatever. And of course, you know, if you can see that they're overusing their blue inhaler, you've then got an in, if you like, to sort of say, well, you are missing doses and that's why you're needing to use this other one a lot more. You know, is there a way that we can maybe think about getting you some better control so you don't have to put up with feeling, you know, wheezy and tight-chested and that kind of stuff?
In some of the education meetings I do, I have a lovely little thing where I ask people to say, what reasons have people given you when you say you're not using enough of your inhaler? Mm. And they will come out with things like, I use the dogs, I got some from granny.
Yeah.
I had an import from my sister, who's a pharmaceutical representative in Finland. Whatever it might be, there's always an excuse. And that's because a patient, if they're caught out, can't say, sorry, I was lying.
Can exactly. We start again? None of us would.
Just ask three, or people, please send in to PCI. If you've heard people say, I'm sorry, I was making all that up. I wasn't really taking my medication like I said I was.
Mm.
We don't do that, but we've got to stop patients getting into that alley.
Absolutely, yeah. And it is a difficult place to be in, isn't it? I mean, when it comes to health, in my view, you've got kind of two types of people. You've got people who will absolutely go for their review and they'll have their flu jab and they're, you know, they're very proactive. And then you have that group of people who are reactive. So it comes back to that thing, doesn't it? I think as clinicians undertaking reviews, we need to think of that review not as in, let me review the last year of your life in isolation, but let me review what the next year of your life should look like. Do you see what I mean?
I do, and I'm just conscious of the time. And what I'm sort of thinking is we've actually covered quite a lot about online forms. We've talked a lot about inhaler medication and smoking and personalised asthma action plans.
Mm.
We've probably used up our time on this session, but it's important to remember we would always also be discussions about prevention. Do they need immunisations? Are there ways, yes, we can prevent things going on? Really important to do ideas, concerns, expectations, understand that patient's view about why they're there and what they're doing and what they expect from treatment, so we can try and align our thinking along with theirs to get the best outcomes.
Which is your proactive approach, isn't it, as opposed, yeah, to reacting when they're unwell. And I would say one other thing, Steve, just before we wrap up, is to think about when you're doing those reviews. Because if you're doing a review in someone who is well, asymptomatic, hasn't had an exacerbation in the last however long, the review is very different. If you do a review with someone who is just out of hospital or just out of an A&E admission or whatever, the discussion you have is very different because they recognise their symptoms because it's in their mind. The problem with asthma, of course, is that where it is so variable, it means that if you're not symptomatic, you forget how bad it can be.
And remember, asthma isn't just an organ, it's a person with asthma. Mm. And we should also be thinking about potential anxiety and management there. We should be thinking about their weight, whether they've got reflux disease contributing to their persistent cough, mm. whether their wheeze is actually inducible laryngeal obstruction, remembering that inducible laryngeal obstruction in the statistics is as common as asthma in adolescents and young adults. Think about allergic rhinitis, oh, coming up with hay fever season. All these things are part of that review, but we've run out of time and we haven't even done the peak flow meter yet.
Oh, my Lord.
So perhaps we'll have to do another one at another point to try and get some of those other areas into. But hopefully you find that interesting. Look forward to talking to you again.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening. If you know somebody that may be interested in this podcast that is yet to become a member of PCRS, please direct them to the PCRS website and take the first step into inspiring more respiratory leaders.